Live from the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona, you are listening to Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4, starring Paul Loudon and Kimberly Isaac. Guys, we had a great show yesterday about labels, and that was most fascinating, very helpful to people to understand that. We talked about increasing awareness. We talked about education, understanding. And today we're going to talk about transitions. What do you mean by transitions?
That's a good question. Well, specifically for this show, I mean, there's lots of different transitions, but for this show, I was thinking that we could talk about the transition from high school into, you know, the adult world, whether it's high school to college or high school to a job or, you know, that kind of transition. I know that's a big topic right now. There's a lot of individuals out there, you know, on the spectrum who are either, you know, about to graduate this year. They've graduated and they might feel a little bit, you know, lost in the shuffle, not sure what to do. But in this show, I really don't want to say what to do as much as how to think about it. One of the biggest things that I find with my clients is, you know, in a sort of typical progression, you know, parents might assume, okay, my child's graduating this year and, you know, they need to do something next. And, you know, parents might have their own ideas of what they want it to be and when they want it to be. But when it comes to autism, it's really important for parents and individuals to understand that there needs to be a planning phase, you know, a thinking phase, before just jumping into anything. And a lot of times, I almost feel like there's this, like a half step. I don't know what to label it. Maybe Paul will end up coming up with something cool because he's good like that when he has some time to think about it. But it's like a personalized planning phase in my mind. That's how I see it. And, you know, and what that, it's just important for people to kind of adjust their expectations time-wise. And also, you know, adjusting their perspective to realize that, you know, this person might be a little bit of a late bloomer. I kind of use that phrase a lot because I think it's relatable. People will understand that. And I think it's important to, as a first step with the planning, is minimize everybody's anxiety about it. Because it's like all of a sudden, you know, maybe you've been in the school system and you've had, you know, support people, you've had different therapies through your school and stuff, and all of a sudden, now that's done. So not only are you faced with this, you know, big wide world in front of you, but a lot of times all your resources, like your therapies and your teachers and support people, are sort of taken away. So at a really difficult time, you know, sometimes people feel like, you know, left and alone and things like that. So I wanted to talk about today, you know, kind of getting some clear and calm thinking about the transition process.
And when, and maybe this you're going to mention later, but I'll just throw it out now, at how much before you graduate high school should you be thinking about thinking and planning?
Well, that's a good question. I sort of feel like, you know, it's never, well, it's always better to do things in as much advance as you can. So, you know, you don't want to wait till a month before graduation to do this. It's a good idea, you know, from my perspective, just starting high school is a good time to start thinking about it. You know, obviously you have 4 years to actually start where you're going to need to do something. But just the piece that I think is a really important beginning piece, and this is what I actually wanted to start talking about, is working on self-advocacy. And that you can start anytime, you know, any age. But it's really important because a person really needs to learn that they, you know, that they have more power than they think they do in the world. And part of that is developing a greater self-awareness, understanding that there are things that they might need in the world, what, you know, in a job situation or in school, and learning how to communicate about that. And so the self-advocacy, the self-awareness piece to me is a huge starting point that you can do, you know, again, at any age. And, you know, sometimes...
sooner the better, probably.
Yeah, well, I think it's important for the person to realize they have choices, you know, and sometimes that's not apparent. Sometimes it's easy to forget to give the person choices along the way in their school life or even sometimes in their home life, you know, when there's a lot of needs there and stuff. You know, sometimes parents might feel like they're just sort of managing their kids, and it's easy to forget to encourage to give them choices and, you know, and give them the chance to think about what works for them, what they like, what they don't like, you know, and even just basic things in life, you know, what to wear, what time, when are they their best learners, you know, starting to think about things about themselves so that they can use that information to advocate for themselves in, you know, different situations.
And if people don't plan, they don't think about it, what are some of the things you have witnessed happen right after high school? Or even it might start before. I mean, maybe people may get anxious. They go, oh, wow, a week left. My routine of going to school every day. I mean, it could be many different things.
Well, usually what I've seen is about junior year of high school. That's when parents in particular really start to have a lot of anxiety and worry. And I think part of it is because, you know, under, I guess, societal norms or whatever, you know, kids usually either have already, like, initiated some sort of path for themselves. They're able to do a little bit more for themselves. And usually they do it right after high school. And these parents, what they're finding is their kids have needed so much help, and they may still feel like they're behind to where they're going, oh, my gosh, how in 2 years are we going to catch them up? You know, but really what I try to do with parents is help them understand trying to rush and, you know, in quotes here, catch them up isn't really the best idea. It's about identifying where they're at developmentally, you know, emotionally, and really evaluating what is the next step and taking it, you know, in a very step-by-step process. Because when you rush anything and there's a lot of chaos, it really puts a lot of stress on the individual, you know, especially these guys, you know, they have processing difficulties at times. They need more time to process information and things. And so if things are flying by them, they're not going to be a part of the process. The process is going to be done to them. And that's not, in the end, that's not really serving to them because they need to be part of the process, you know, as appropriate. And so what I see is that panic. And what I do is I try to help, you know, kind of calm the situation down by resetting the thinking on things and really looking at it as, you know, being much more deliberate of a process. And so that's usually what I see. And then, of course, so you have junior year and then, senior year, there's a lot more anxiety. And then just before summer, you know, parents have a lot of anxiety because now they feel like they're left alone. Like the teachers aren't there anymore, you know, to teach them. What are they going to do during the day? And are they just going to be sitting home doing nothing? And so I also think it really helps to have some support people to help parents through the process that are outside of the school too, you know, and just starting to think about it. And I'm just like a big fan of the balanced thinking and getting organized and making sure that you're operating from an emotionally regulated place the best you can. If you're operating from a place of stress, it's very likely that you're going to take steps that aren't going to be the most efficient, you know, or beneficial for your child. That stress could be passed on to the child. I've seen that sometimes where parents are stressing out and then these kids in high school are feeling a lot of panic because they feel like, how am I going to do this? What people are expecting of me? You know, how am I going to do this? I can barely manage myself in high school right now.
But it's part of it also not just worrying about how they can do it, but also worrying about the parent that's stressing, that what they can't seem to have any impact on them, and, of course, it's out of their control. But
oh, the child?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that. That doesn't mean it doesn't happen. They may not be expressing it. That's kind of one of the core deficits, though, is that perspective taking and understanding that, but that doesn't mean it's not happening. So I don't know, Paul, do you remember this time in your
life? Not even remotely.
Okay.
It was 13 years ago now at the end.
Oh.
So, right, that's right.
You know, I have a hard time remembering what happened 3 years ago. Throw another decade on top of that.
I figured I would just ask. But what about any, can you think of any experiences where you felt maybe, I mean, because you're an adult, you're on the spectrum, and currently you're involved in some different projects, you know, in your adult life. But has there been a time where you felt like maybe you were supposed to be doing something, or there was, like, expectations on you and your, you know, anything you can remember?
I always feel like I'm supposed to be doing something because the world sort of is composed of expectations, and I know that I don't end up meeting a lot of them, that, you know, in daily life, you know, my house is dirty enough that most people probably wouldn't say, well, it's somewhere in the acceptable range, that you're just sort of untidy. It's dirty enough that it's sort of past untidy, and I know that I should keep it cleaner than I do, but I really don't. Things like that where, you know, I think that, you know, if I were less self-aware, then I might be more stressed about it because I might have a different idea of what clean is supposed to be as cleaner from, you know, TV or what I've seen other people do. And not know that there's a range, so that might be more stressful. And also wouldn't know that I'm doing this by my own choice in some ways. So it's sort of, but things like that. There's a lot of things where, you know that there are expectations from people around you, from society, just general expectations that I'm not necessarily meeting. My yard used to be awful. I hired someone to cut my lawn, but it used to be that I would cut it less often than I should, and, you know, every once in a while a neighbor would make a comment on it or something, or I'd wait until the homeowners association wrote me a complaint because I knew that they always had to write one complaint and then give you 10 days to correct it on your lawn. So I knew that I could wait that long without any penalty.
Oh, okay.
And so I actively did it, and, you know, I knew that it was sort of conceptually wrong to do it that way, but technically not. So there were a lot of things, that I feel like they probably would have stressed me more if I didn't know as much as they did, but they were clear expectations that I wasn't living up to.
Okay. And actually, I'm glad you brought up the home life. And
so, just to be fair about my lawn, just one thing. Mowing the lawn can kill me, so I had that excuse. I'm very, very allergic to fire ant. So I had more anxiety about doing the lawn than not doing the lawn. In that case, I actually don't mind mowing the lawn, except for the fact that I'm afraid of dying each time I do it.
Well,
I'm glad you clarified that.
I just wanted to bring that one up.
Yeah, well, what I was thinking is maybe we should take a short break, but when we come back, I wanted to actually talk about some different categories in life. So we were going to talk a little bit. We have self-advocacy, health, you know, just independent living and things like that. We'll get into that a little bit more after the break.
Birenbaum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You are listening to Breakthrough Thinking here at Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona, and the second Monday and Tuesday of each month.
Last time you said 3 o'clock.
I know, and this time I've been drinking coffee.
Are you okay? Too much caffeine.
What is in that coffee? No, I don't drink.
Maybe you're just so excited about the show.
I am.
You can hardly contain yourself.
Second Monday and Tuesday of each month, 3 to 4, Understanding Autism. Talking about transitions, this is really important. I think, you know, whether you're on the spectrum or not, transitions can be scary.
I mean,
really scary.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I think if we all sort of take a step back, and I know for me, I mean, they are, because, you know, it's a turning point, you know, also by law, like you turn 18, all of a sudden you're an adult. You know, what does that mean? You know, it can be scary for people, and I think under good circumstances where people can process quickly and understand things better, it can be tough. So for someone that has trouble with those things, it's even harder and scarier, because it also means you're out in the world more with people more. And if you're already having trouble with that, it's like, oh, no, this is going to increase, you know, and it's going to be more on me. I'm not going to have people around me to decode like I have in school. You know, it's just like a huge pressure. And so we were talking about self-advocacy, and I have some other topics I wanted to bring up. But part of self-advocacy, you know, I think, you know, it includes self-awareness, so learning things about yourself, understanding yourself, and also being comfortable to communicate, you know, your needs. And we talked about a little bit of this yesterday with our labels show yesterday is, you know, being able to talk about your, you know, condition with other people and asking for things that you need and asking for help. Sometimes people are really afraid to ask for help. You know, asking for help isn't a bad thing. But I know people, you know, when you're in a position most of your life where you've needed a lot of help, sometimes someone might feel bad, like, well, how come no one else around me is asking for help? Why is it just me? You know, and I think helping someone understand that advocating for yourself is very empowering, because you're taking more control of the situation and not just waiting for things to happen or boil over, you know, interactions to boil over. So it includes that, and also knowing your rights. This has come up a little bit more lately in some of the people that I work with, you know, rights and when you're entering job situations and also with, you know, people who qualify for things like vocational rehab, which we can talk about a little bit later, you know, just understanding what's out there for yourself, what resources there are, what you can utilize, you know, things like that. And, I mean, so, you know, and there's a lot to it, but, again, it's never too early to start, so thinking about that is really important. And I just want to say it's very, very important to include the individual, because I also see a lot of parents start putting together, you know, plans and without, you know, their child, and that's not a good idea. You definitely want to have as much input as you can. And even if it's not something that's totally relevant to what you were thinking in that moment, it's good information to use for later. because this is their life. They're the ones who have to live it. They're the ones who have to interact in the world, and you know, and so it's important to keep them in the loop with things, you know, at the level that's appropriate for where they're at.
And I do have two things to talk about in relation to self-advocacy. One of them is that it's very important to model a good form of self-advocacy, that while you may be trying to teach your kid to stand up for themselves or self-advocate, well, you know, be aware that when you're yelling at tech support on the phone, they're seeing that too, and they're seeing that that's how you self-advocate for your concerns. That, you know, when you're getting upset at the person at McDonald's just for, you know, accidentally putting onions on your burger, they're seeing that as you know, acceptable public behavior, that you're modeling self-advocacy anytime that you have any sort of confrontation like that or correction like that, and that, you know, that can, and obviously that's going to be a lot harder on someone if they don't recognize that this isn't how to do it. But one big challenge for self-advocacy for me is that often there's not someone to self-advocate to, that when you're having concern with a business and you're having a problem, that, you know, you feel that they aren't taking into account the fact that I have autism and I have special challenges in regard to what they're offering me. Take one company. They used to have, there was a technical support number that you could contact or an email form. And the number you could call immediately and get someone to talk to, the email form they'd get back to you later that day or the next day if it was too near the end of the day. Then they changed the email form to, we'll try to get back to you within 48 hours. And it was much closer to 3 or 4 days than 2 days. So the only way to get timely support was to talk with someone on the phone. Now, for someone on the autism spectrum, that can be more challenging. So it really felt like those of us who are more comfortable as communicating via text were being treated as second-class citizens because we could no longer get immediate support, and our support was just sort of when we get to it rather than immediate. And who was I supposed to talk to about that? When I talked with the people on the phone, they were really like, well, we don't make that policy. We don't have any interaction with the people who do. How do you self-advocate in a situation like that? It's very difficult. And the world is sort of constructed this way where, you know, you can ask for a manager sometimes and you can talk with a manager, but even they aren't necessarily at the level where they can help with what you're doing. So self-advocacy, not just talking about, you know, when to do it, but really talking about how and saying, you know, making sure that, you know, where possibly say, well, look, if you can't figure out how to do it, come to us and we'll try to help, you know, you look for who you're supposed to get in contact with might be a thing. Because the world isn't really constructed for real sort of consumer feedback. They really don't care to hear that kind of thing. But in the case of disabilities especially, it's the kind of thing they need to hear and are in many cases legally obligated to hear. But there's not a framework for knowing how to do it, especially when you're on the spectrum, and just getting the point saying, look, I do need this help is challenging. Then when they say, well, I'm sorry, I can't help you, you know, a lot of people on the spectrum might then just, you know, give up because, like, oh, he can't help me. Well, then there's nothing for me to do.
You know, that's such a good point Paul makes. You know, and I have some courses on negotiation, and it sort of blends into that, where when I hear no, I mean, in most contexts, obviously, but in business, it doesn't mean no. It means I probably have a person that doesn't have the authority to grant the request. And so I hear it differently, and I sort of train my mind. So one answer is, you know, if you can, you always go to the absolute highest person. Now, they're going to try to move you through the command, and that's always frustrating often. But if you can get to the highest level person, better yet, I'll just give one tip. I think it will apply. Is if anytime you, let's say, a bank account or some other vendor you use, but let's take a bank account, I always make sure I meet immediately the highest level person there. And become sort of
friends
with them.
How do you ask for that?
But see, there you go. You said become friends with them. You socially interact with a person
that's a good
someone
point.
On a spectrum
yeah.
is not going to be
yeah.
able to do. That the expectation when you're on a spectrum is that they are going to act professionally. Not everyone acts professionally all the time. So when you have a need and a concern as a customer, you tend to think, they're going to do what they can to meet that need. They often aren't. In fact, they're often going to intentionally give you the runaround. You expect honesty. When they say, I can't help, you believe that is true. You believe that is literal rather than saying that that means that that person can't help because they don't have the authority. You think that that means you can't be helped.
Yeah.
So for someone on the spectrum, it's really important when you're trying to help prepare them to self-advocacy is helping them to recognize not just how within themselves to talk about themselves, but how to figure out who to talk to and how to request the right person to talk to. And also, honestly, is to, talk about, trying to improve the way businesses treat people with these
things. That I agree. Because that would help.
Usually there's, not a place for self-advocacy.
Yeah.
That maybe, you have a problem with a local McDonald's and you need to talk to McDonald's corporate or whatever, and that's something that you may not even recognize as being, a thing.
Well, and this brings up really a huge point that I think people leave out when they think about autism is they think in their minds, okay, my child's dependent and we have to get them independent, and there's this big jump. But really, for someone to really truly be independent, they have to be confident in being interdependent.
Yeah.
Interdependent is being able to relate to others, and I can relate to what you were saying about the bank thing. I can, because I can size up situations. I can also learn from my past experience much easier. And sometimes people on the spectrum, because they're taking things so literally, they're not going to put together all the pieces like maybe you or I would.
Yeah.
But I think that the point that it brings up is this concept of interdependence, to really walk alongside your child and not just expect them, to know all of these things or assume that they have necessarily been watching you do these things. Kind of like this tricky thing, because your kids will watch and hear what you say and they might, model that. But that doesn't mean everything you think your child's seen you do, they've done. Because I've seen parents where they go, I've done this a million times. How do you not know how to do it? Well, maybe they weren't really picking up on that one thing that you thought they were. So it's really important, in RDI we talk about guiding. And guiding is really a step-by-step, side-by-side process where you want to provide opportunity. You want to provide a challenge enough to where the person's competent, but you're not going to let them fail if that next step for them is too much. Or you're going to scale it back to where they can be competent. You're going to help them through it side by side. And so it's a really different way of thinking because, and it really, I think one of the biggest things a person can do, for this transition time is adjust their own thinking and ask themselves, how did I do it? Because, it's not an easy thing. Sometimes we forget. It's like, okay, when autism is in the mix, everybody has a lot of panic and chaos, and that's understandable. But something I like to do is think back to, okay, how would I do this? What did I do? How would I think about it? Because then I can do some sort of a sorting process. This was hard for me too. Why would I think it would be different just because, it's this person? And so it's important to really adjust your thinking on stuff like that. And there's a lot of details. We could probably do like a whole self-advocacy show in terms of more of the how and stuff like that. But I also wanted to talk about another tip that I give people is for parents to start why don't we take a break and then I'll get into this tip because it's kind of a long one.
A long tip. This is good. Stay tuned for more information. And this is Understanding Autism. We're talking about transitions. We'll be right back.
Money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
At Beerenbaum Baum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Understanding Autism, the second Monday and Tuesday of each month from 3 to 4, starring Paul Loudon and Kimberly Isaac. Usually I say Paul Loudon all the way from Houston, Texas. Paul, has it been cold out there? What's going on in Houston?
Houston is indecisive.
Oh, wow.
One day it'll be 35 at the hottest point of the day.
Oh.
And then 2 days later it'll be like 75.
Really?
So
it's sort of like
always
Denver.
Like
Houston
that,
does that, yeah.
Unpredictable weather.
Interesting.
Strange. Yeah.
But we're talking about transitions. Very important. Kimberly, you said you have
a long tip.
Not just a tip, but a long tip. I can't wait to hear it.
Well, it wasn't something quick before the break. But, yeah. No, something that I suggest to parents to start is really to start, you know, a binder for themselves. And but actually, even before the binder, we as a team start thinking about all the things that, you know, we do in our adult lives and start making some notes on categories of different things we want to help teach the individual. And so, you know, self-advocacy is on the list, but also, you know, health is on the list. That's always a big one because here you are, now you're going to be, you know, out in the world. And for some people, they're used to, like, maybe their parents preparing meals for them and, you know, maybe moms and dads, too. You know, they may, like, I know my brother's a great dad. He makes sure his son has vegetables, all, you know, and fruits and stuff like that. But, you know, if someone's used to having their meals made for them and all of a sudden they're living without that, you know, parents get concerned, like, oh, no, they're just going to go to fast food. They're not going to get vegetables. You know, teaching about some of the health stuff that maybe hasn't been, you know, taught along the way. And so health's a category. Relationships are a huge one, friends and dating. So we usually make that a category because, you know, I think the biggest thing, it is the biggest thing that parents will tell me, their number one fear, their number one stress every time is what will my child do when I'm no longer here?
Mm.
And part of that, you know, is just, you know, some of it's employment, but a lot of times, you know, parents are very weepy in that they think, my child's going to be lonely. You know, who are they going to spend holidays with? Who's going to love them? Who's going to hang out with them? Are they just going to be alone? You know, because they have so much difficulty with relationships. And so that is a very huge category as well. Some other potential, you know, categories is, well, housing. Housing is a big one. Employment is a big one. You know, safety is a huge one. Because you think about certain things that when you do become more independent, you're out in the world more. You know, part of being interdependent and interacting and being on your own is encountering strangers all the time, you know. And sometimes it's hard for a person on the spectrum to size up who would be someone that's approachable and who's not, and, you know, not picking up on certain things. Unfortunately, I mean, I've heard a lot of stories of people, like young adults taking, like, public transportation and getting taken advantage of, you know, either financially. Like, I actually have a client that I work with on the East Coast who, he has such a generous heart and spirit, and his parents are givers, and they're always giving money, like, homeless people on the sides of the street. Their family does that. And when I saw him last, this actually happened while I was there, but he saw a homeless man. We were walking down the street together, and he said, you know, I want to give this person money. And I said, oh, I said, well, that's very generous of you. You know, in my mind, I saw this person, and I'm a generous person as well, but I didn't feel too comfortable with the situation. We were actually underground, about to go onto the metro, and it's dark down there. And this person, you know, was on the floor and everything and covered up, and I couldn't really tell if he was, like, asleep or not. And so in my mind, I thought, I don't know if I should disturb this person. But I made that judgment based on all these factors I was noticing and accounting for. Well, he kind of ran away from me and decided he was going to run up there and give him the money. So I'm thinking, okay, stay calm. You know, to myself, I got scared because I didn't know how this person would react, if he'd be startled. So my student, he takes out money, you know, and he gives it to the guy. And then he stands there and he stares at the guy. He's staring at this homeless man. And I was like, you know, I said, okay, that was nice of you. Let's go. And I'm like, why is he staring? Oh, my gosh. The homeless man started to get very angry. Why are you staring at me? Why are you staring at me? And I'm pulling him, you know, and I'm not going to say the student's name, but he goes, well, I was waiting for him to say thank you. And I was like, oh, and he goes, what? And he goes, are you upset with me? And I said, no, I'm very concerned. I want to talk to you because you have a very good intention, but I want to keep you safe, you know? And so anyway, how did I get to this? Well, the safety issues. I'm like, wow, that was such a kind thing to do, but he didn't have the judgment, the ability to size up the situation to either know if that person was good to approach. And then secondly, it's just, you know, the best way of going about it. You know, and so, and the thing is, this individual is actually an adult, you know, man. He's taller than I am. And so somebody who, you know, this homeless man's not thinking, oh, I wonder if this person has a developmental disability. You know, he took it as a threat, the staring, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, you know. So anyway, safety is a huge category. I'm personally, like, as a person and a professional, I put that at the very top of the list of addressing and just, you know, and so what we do, though, is we make these categories and we think about our own thinking about the categories. And we think about things we think about with safety, and we make these lists and we make a plan of gradually, you know, teaching about these things. And gradually, you know, within these categories, actually it's the same process that I like to do with my clients. Is like, let's just think about, you know, what are we noticing? You know, even walking at night by yourself, like to a car, or if you take college classes at night, you know, what are some things to consider? Making these lists and then very systematically, not throwing it all on the person or freaking out and getting anxiety, but just one thing at a time. And also safety things like just, you know, being at home safety. You know, maybe someone wants to make an omelet for themselves or something, and, you know, just remembering to turn things off and, you know, locking the door and answering, you know, answering the door is another safety thing. Just thinking of all these different things that we do, somehow we feel like, you know, we automatically do them, but we didn't always. You know, we've learned and we've had experiences to teach us otherwise. So my long tip overall is considering putting together some kind of binder and keeping it as an ongoing, you know, resource for yourself to keep your thoughts organized and to work on just small little bits, you know, at a time. And so that way you also feel a little bit calmer, like, because a lot of times people say there's just so much for them to know. Well, that's true, But if we have some sort of organized starting point, you know, we can go about it in the best possible way, you know, and having a team really helps.
And you mentioned, you know, as a parent, you can imagine how worried you could be, right, if someone's on the spectrum and there's so many things out there. Now, there was a movie that might show somewhat an example of the parents. I don't know if the movie was about autism. If it wasn't, we've talked about movies before. Sometimes they're not representing the truth.
Right.
But I think on the parent side, they were concerned. Do you remember a movie? I think it's called The Other Sister, Juliet Lewis.
I don't know
if she had autism.
Oh, I've seen a movie Paul hasn't seen. That's amazing.
And I want to make it clear, I'm not sure it was autism. But,
well, they didn't specify it. That's
yeah,
why.
But there was something there.
Yeah.
But it just showed how the desire of you know, now the young adult wanted independence. But the parents were really very, and
right.
actually, legitimately,
right.
they should be. And I thought it was a great performance. I think she won Best Actress. And the guy, Gino, whatever his name, he should have won Best Actor.
Actually, Paul, you have to see that. It's actually just a great movie.
It's just a great movie.
But this is the point, and this is a good point.
With the parents.
It's okay
yeah.
to be fearful, but in that movie, what happened was they were fearful and holding on so tight,
yeah.
it didn't guide her to independence. They took it all away.
Except the dad wanted to
right.
push it, and the
yeah.
was a fabulous movie.
It is a good movie.
So
yeah.
I would...
It's a tearjerker.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I cried everything,
good.
So actually that's not really true.
But it was a very, very good movie, and I would recommend it.
But that's
in
a
general.
Good point, though, and it's okay to be afraid. I mean, I get afraid for the people that I work with. I care about them, and again, you can't control everything in life, but I think the key is your mindset, your organization, your balanced thinking about stuff, you know, your support network, and it does help to have, I keep saying to have a team, and I know some people listening might be going, but I don't have anybody, it's just me. You know, sometimes even if you call a friend, invite them over and just say, hey, will you help me think about some of these things? Like, what do we do for safety? Or what do we do, you know, in relationship? You know, just brainstorming with someone, maybe that would be just something small, you know, that could happen. But why don't we take our final break, and then when we come back, we can continue our discussion about transition.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
At Birenbaum & Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. we take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Welcome back again. You are listening to Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday of the month from 3 to 4, starring Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon.
I thought you were going to say Flea to 4.
I almost said Flea to 4.
I can't let it go. It's just funny.
It is funny, and it will be one of the highlight films of this season. The question I have in this last segment, and then I know you have other things you and Paul want to talk about, is emotional regulated place. You use that term. How do you describe that to the listeners? Emotional regulated place. I like the term, and I think I know what it means, but how do you describe it? Because that sounds like a good goal for anyone.
Yes, it's actually helped me. I'm glad you asked about this. I like this question. I like all questions, but this is great because I think it does genuinely make a difference in absolutely anything a person does. And I've learned this term in my professional training with relationship development intervention. Emotional regulation really looks at your physiological state before you're going to be communicating and doing something. So, for example, and this has actually helped me as a person, I have, diagnosed generalized anxiety disorder, panic disorder, and this has just helped me. But a lot of times people don't realize that internally they're operating from a lot of anxiety. And even if you don't realize it, if your heart rate's up, and your blood pressure's up, you're going to be communicating differently than you would if it was, not up, not elevated. And so something that we do in parent training is we really teach parents to be aware of their emotional regulation when they're interacting with their kids for a few reasons. I mean, one is if you're about to teach someone something or, provide some clarification on something, you want to be sure that you're thinking about it as clearly as you can, and also to really be in the moment, to be able to be with your kids and share experiences. So emotional regulation really means, like, let me examine myself. If my heart rate's up right now, it's probably not a good time to, go teach this new thing. So my next step is going to be, I'm going to go do something to help myself re-regulate.
I learned that, guess where?
Oh.
NLP.
No, actually, no, before that.
Oh, that
I
was
know,
tricky
but thank
of
you,
you,
Paul. That,
that
I know.
Was tricky.
It was a trick question because I could have learned it there. But Dale Carnegie, public speaking.
Oh, really?
I started to notice.
But isn't Carnegie related to NLP?
Yeah, they have similar.
Aha.
You're right. They have similar. He came way before
but you always
NLP.
Say
yeah, and Dale Carnegie was great. But I noticed that when I was going to do public speaking, my heart would start boom, 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 going really fast. So I experimented as I was walking up the aisle to do a little two-minute speech or something that they have you do in the beginning. I would breathe in a way to slow down my system. Mm-hmm. And as I slowed down my heart rate to normal or as close to normal as possible, my whole state of being, my mind changed.
Yeah.
And I didn't have that fear. Try public speaking when you're just racing a mile a minute.
No, thank you.
Could pass out, actually, right?
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
you're very good at public speaking.
But for parents, emotional regulation is critical on that front. And also because a lot of times their relationships with their kids have either a lot of, tension that has evolved over time, And there's a lot of not understanding each other going on. So it's really easy to walk into a situation already memorizing the pattern of behavior going, well, here we go. It's just going to be another struggle. And it's very interesting when people start to monitor their own physiological state. And it's the parents that I've worked with, it's made, like, life-changing difference in the way that they interact with their children. It's a key component of the program.
Part of this is how to change your state? Do you teach the parents how to change that state?
Yeah, we do, and it's different for everybody because the key is, here's the other thing, emotional regulation is also a deficit in the autism spectrum. So we think about, we really want to model self-regulation, emotional regulation the best we can. Sometimes I'm in situations with clients, you know, if I don't know what to do or I'm feeling stressed, I'm going to be really honest about that and say, you know, I really need some time to think about that. Because if I start spouting out answers to things when I'm not in that place myself, I don't feel like I'm giving, you know, proper advice or guidance. And so so it's a really important component. And especially, you know, when it comes to autism, you know, there's just so much anxiety that surrounds it, really. And parents are, you know, in a constant state of anxiety and chaos and fear. And so learning that particular tool as a parent is really quite powerful. But I'm glad you asked about that. But even if, you know, for people that aren't, you know, this isn't, emotional regulation is not specific to autism. It, in general, like I said, it's helped me a lot having anxiety disorder. I ask myself, you know, am I ready to do this right now? Am I ready to have a difficult conversation even? Like if I'm going to say, you know, I have something tough I need to bring up to somebody, you know, I really want to make sure that I'm in the best place I can be to do it instead of coming in and then letting my physiology dictate how it's going to go versus my mind and being, you know, more mindful about it.
But so, very important, one, to recognize it, two, how to change it.
Well, and that's what we teach.
Part.
The first piece is recognizing it in yourself. And once you start being aware of it, it's like a trigger for it, or a trigger for you. You go, uh-oh, I'm starting to feel, you know, in some cases with parents, we've actually had them wear heart rate monitors.
Mm.
It's hard for them to
biofeedback.
And they're like, wow. And then it's like, but it's just a really, it's a powerful tool. It's changed my life. But I'm glad you asked about it.
I wonder, is there a possibility to do a show someday on tips on how to change state?
Might
be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we could if
a sort of stress management type things.
Well, actually, it'd be interesting to talk about the differences in how Paul and I might
address
talk
that
about
sort of
this, because I know the way I manage stress or you is definitely different
for
you.
Oh, yeah.
And so that would be interesting. So maybe for parents listening, they could relate more to how maybe I'm doing or recommending it. And then for adults on the spectrum and for understanding their kids.
That would be great.
Oh, they definitely manage stress differently.
That could even be a workshop or seminar, right?
It could be.
Ooh, thank you.
No, really. I think that's a very big one. Very huge.
Our producer's laughing.
He is?
Yeah.
He has fruits and vegetables.
I know. He's a good dad.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Actually, did want to say one more thing. I know we have a few minutes left. Or 4 minutes left. Adding in another safety thing is internet and technology safety. And that's a big one with people on the spectrum because, you know, internet and technology is something that is sometimes comforting, sometimes their social outlet, and also they're going to be using it more for self-management and stuff like that. And so in your safety categories, I like to add internet and technology safety. And that's actually another good one for anybody.
Yeah.
There's a lot of online dating and meetups and things and just talking that sort of thing. But
Safety,
so I mean, I know there's a lot more to this topic, obviously, but I'm hoping that that this inspired some thought and also some calmness about how to proceed on something like this. On our Facebook page, I posted today as a note some resources for people who are in the position of transitions or about to be, or if you're just interested for the future, links. Where you can find articles and information about resources and resources in your area. I found one in particular that I'm, like, in love with at the moment, autismsource.org. I love because you type in your city and your state, and it pulls up your resources. And that, to me, has, like, been, oh, like, I'm so excited because I live here in Phoenix and I do travel for work, but I know we have listeners all over, and so I'm hoping that that will be a really good one for people. They can
I did that, too. I typed in best radio personalities in the field of autism. Paul Loudon and Kimberly Isaac came up every time. I'm not kidding. No, this is unique, though. I mean, I really honor both of you for giving of yourselves to so many people that ordinarily they could be lost in the shuffle. And Paul, that's just not a good thing.
No, definitely. No.
And I have to give a shout-out to Paul again.
Yeah.
No, and I'm really doing this sincerely because yesterday we had a show fan in the show with us, and she told me after the show how much you've helped her. She goes and listens to our shows over and over. She's not the first one to tell me that, but when she showed me all of her Paul notes, I was like, oh, well, not exactly all of them. But
and the book will be published called Paul Notes in
no.
early 2015.
No, but you're really helping a lot of people.
No doubt
so.
About it.
Yeah, and it's pretty
no
good.
Question.
Yeah.
Talking
so.
About my experiences. So.
Yeah.
And it's good stuff. Wow. This is so valuable. This was another great show. Again, if people want to listen to the show again to hear what maybe they didn't hear the first time, breakradioshow.com, breakradioshow.com, go to Understanding Autism, and click on the archives. You can hear this stuff. It's good stuff.
Join our community at facebook.com/Understanding Autism Radio, where you can talk to us, ask questions, send ideas, whatever, become involved in the show in your own way.
Yeah, we love that. We definitely love that. Today was kind of a fun show. We had a little more laughter and silliness with the Fleet of Four thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, somebody I know that I respect who knows radio told me maybe to add a little more laughter to the show.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there we go.
Why not? And I kind
of
thought about
Fleet
it. I'm like,
four.
Why don't we? It's kind of a heavy topic. Why don't we add some laughter to it?
And it was, that was
nice
a good
laughter,
one.
Yeah. The Fleet of Four, you did it. That was funny.
I'll
so.
Need
right.
a psychological examination after this one. No, I'm kidding. I have done that in the past. Anyway, another great show, and of course, next month, right? Are there topics? I don't know if you have the topics yet. But.
Well, we don't have them finalized, but check our Facebook page because we'll be posting as we plan and finalize those.
Well, excellent. Paul Loudon,
thank you once again. And you're going back to Houston, of course. And Kimberly, we'll see you next month as well. And for another episode of Understanding Autism, of course, the second Monday and Tuesday of each month from 3 to 4. And remember, People and Games, starring Paul Loudon. Very good show today.
And those are archived on Break
Radio Show. Yeah, they are as well. BreakRadioShow.com. Go to People and Games and hear all that. Very interesting an industry that is exploding. And we'll be back tomorrow. Breakthrough Sports Real Hockey coming up tomorrow, Wednesday, 4 to 7. Have a great night. Everyone's in.